My name is John Wedger. I'm a retired Metropolitan Police detective. I specialised in child abuse investigations, and my journey to prominence came in my role as a whistleblower for speaking out and exposing the Metropolitan Police's deliberate cover-up of child prostitution, child sexual exploitation, child grooming, whatever you want to term it, and the ensuing struggle I had with the Met Police in order to get my story out there.
Amazing, really. I mean, you know, you're doing a job investigating these people. So where did they draw the line? There must have been some prosecutions and others which washed.
Yeah, well, what you've got to look at is that London is one of the biggest capital cities in the Western world. It is the most diverse city with the oldest police force in the world. And there was no dedicated unit to look at kids from the care system, because I only dealt with kids from the care system, who were being pimped out, as it were. So it started off with one girl, a little 14-year-old girl, making an allegation. She was being picked up from kids' home and trafficked out to all sorts of clients. Went to another. I think the end, I need to clarify it with the ICSA evidence, but I think it ended up with 36 children in a very short period of time. It got reduced when it went to committal at the Crown Court to 2 children, and unfortunately in the following months, maybe a year, both of the children ended up dead in suspicious circumstances.
Wow. Well, look, how did you get from this one report up to so many kids and then back down to 2 again?
Well, let's make it straight. The police's intention at the time was to silence this one girl, because she continually kept making allegations that she was being pimped out, and the police kept telling her to shut up. So she ends up in a care home.
What part of London is this? Can you go into
central? This was Westminster. Westminster, central London. So the little girl.
So they were trying to shut her up. The police were.
Because I was on a specialist unit which dealt with sexual offences against children for commercial gain. So prostitution, pimping, that sort of thing. But it was only as a by the way. It was mainly prostitutes we were dealing with. But under the Street Offences Act, which covers prostitutes, street prostitutes, it also has a child protection element in there. So there was no real dedicated unit. There was no dedicated unit set up until the police were exposed by the Savile Inquiry for their lacklustre approach to this sort of heinous crime. Now, this girl had made allegations that a woman who was known to the vice unit, a known common prostitute, was pimping her and other girls out. And the police knew about it. So I was told, go and see her and shut her up. We know she's a liar. So that was my briefing before I was deployed to go and meet with this little girl. I listened to her and I believed her. And she said to me, it's not just me, John, there's others. So she gave me the name of another girl. I went to visit that girl. That girl was even younger and smaller than her. And she said exactly the same. And we have this MO, now what they call it, grooming gangs. You see it splattered everywhere. Look, no one's reinventing the wheel here. This has been going on probably since the inception of the police. And definitely the cover-up has. Now, they take advantage of girls and boys, because bear in mind, we dealt with girls and boys in our inquiry. I know that you had the Rochdale scandal with 3 girls. We are 36. And in a subsequent inquiry I did, in a week, we found 50. So in all, I've dealt with nearly 100 kids that were being groomed, pimped out, whatever you want to call it, within London. And, you know, it was expanding by the minute. So they take kids, usually that were in care or under care orders with absent parents or drug-addicted parents, and it was a prostitute that would pick them up, and she would deliver them to various venues for the purpose of prostitution. So the venues would include, in the morning, they were taken to crack houses. So can you imagine a crack house. If anyone's ever been in one of these are disgusting venues. And they are also dangerous venues because with crack cocaine and the serving up, the dealing of it, you get serious and organised criminality, firearms possession, you get drug addicts visiting, you get a lot of sexually and airborne transmitted diseases. So we don't just go on about hepatitis, A, B, C, AIDS, HIV. We're on about contagious tuberculosis. You know, these antiquated diseases, which are really common amongst the vagrant community and a drug addicted community. And these little girls were harbouring these life-threatening diseases. They were all on crack cocaine and heroin. They were swapped around in crack houses in exchange for a rocks of crack. The guys doing it were Jamaican guys. The woman taking there was English, right? They were then taken to hotels and they were passed out, sold out by the hour in cheap budget hotels for builders who visit in London for transient trade. So you get a lot of builders coming from the north, from Ireland, and they would get cheap hotel accommodation in the Paddington area, just around the corner from Paddington Station. That's where they would reside. And the hoteliers, when they went off duty in the evening, the night duty staff would make a room available for these guys, for the prostitute who was pimping the girls out, to take these little kids. So these builders, British guys, whatever they were, to have sex with these little girls, which were clearly underage. Clearly underage. And so bear in mind,
how old?
The age group I dealt with was from 9 to 14. 9 was the youngest. A lot of them were underweight because of their lifestyle and their class A drug addiction. But in the late evening, early hours of the morning, the girls were then taken to upmarket Mayfair Arab restaurants where they traded out amongst the Arab clientele for £2,000 a piece. So we had a whole demographic of London society involved in you know, the abuse and the procurement of these kids for prostitution. And the police had known about it for 15 years prior. There was not one dedicated officer, and they had actively covered this criminality up because, as I was to find out, the kids would tell me about some of the clients. And that involved a police officer that operated out of Paddington Police Station. That was later corroborated by a senior detective that dealt with sexual abuse. She corroborated that earlier last year because she had prostitutes coming to her that said that at the same time I was dealing with the kids, these women are now a lot older, were saying that they were being picked up from care homes and pimped out in the same area, in the same gang, as it were. And one of the guys that was organising it was a police officer, which was the same information I had all them years ago from Paddington Police Station. And that was information.
The same name of the same police officer?
Yes, yes, yes. And the name was passed on to the corruption command. Nothing was ever done. This guy was allowed to retire without incident in Thailand. And that's where he remains to this day.
Well, you brought up so much there. What about these two girls that died, though? I mean, in this particular case, how did that make you feel at the time?
Well, absolutely broken. And what happened was, it wasn't just the police officer involved. There was a judge involved, and he was involved in altering the sentences if any of the older prostitutes were ever put before him, which were involved in also, you know, in this bigger racket procuring kids, right? There was someone senior in the music department in the BBC involved. So all this information was pushed over by myself to the senior officer running the vice unit within the Metropolitan Police, and he threatened me, right, with the loss of my home, my job, and my children if I was to ever disclose my findings He went on to say that I had no idea who or what I was dealing with, and if I continued with this investigation, I would be thrown to the wolves. And he pleaded with me to back up and said, you'd have no idea what you're dealing with. So the girls, a trial did go ahead, which got absolutely no publicity. It was the first ever case under the new 2003 sexual offences legislation to cover grooming and prostitution of children. It was orchestrated, run by a woman. She was convicted and given 15 years imprisonment. We hear nothing about that in the paper, right? Nothing at all in the press. And shortly afterwards, the trial, the youngest victim, the bravest victim, was found dead in suspicious circumstances with an overdose of drugs. And shortly afterwards, the second one. So reduced the indictment from 36 witnesses down to two. That was a Crown prosecution did that. And then both them girls ended up dead. We got a woman, a known prostitute to the police, who was known for being involved in young girls. We got her convicted for the first time in a British court. Right. She got 15 years imprisonment. And there was hardly any press coverage of it. Hardly any. There was never any follow-up regarding the judge, never any follow-up regarding the police officer or the member of the BBC. Nothing at all was followed up on that.
In that case, or is he, you know, did you manage to keep him out?
No. He had connections to the prostitute that was running the Vice Ring. And after, just shortly after the conviction, both girls were found dead of suspicious drug overdoses, both of them. One of them, her grandparents to this day campaign for justice for her. They've even been interviewed by the BBC, and they scream a cover-up by social services and by police.
If they're interested in supporting them, can you tell, how can we find them? Do you know?
Their name, whether they're still alive, I don't know, but their names are Linda and George Tomsett, T-O-M-S-S-E-T-T. Their little girl's name is Zoe Tomsett. You can Google her and you can find details of the case there. But there was a bigger picture going on here. And, you know, we're seeing a lot now in the press coming out, but we never hear anything of the investigations that I partook in London, and never hear of the aggressive way in which the senior management of the Met Police threatened to take away my home, my job and my children if I spoke about, you know, the child prostitution in London. Nothing.
Amazing, really. Yeah. I mean, the other thing I think is well worth looking into, because the reason we're talking about this is because there's been, Elon Musk intervening, saying that we should have another child inquiry, because that has been quashed by Jez Phillips at the moment. And it's kind of interesting that Musk has weighed in, because he's at the same time having a pop at Nigel Farage for not supporting Tommy Robinson, which is obviously why it's happening. It's not just Musk is doing this out of the goodness of his heart. But I think one of the things that people don't understand, just as they don't understand what's been going on within broadcasting, John, behind the scenes, and the change in the where these producers are coming from, many of them part of the Zionist networks, within the police, there's been a complete change, hasn't there, in the way that prosecutions happen because of the appearance of the Crown Prosecution Service. Of course, we've now got the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who was involved in many extremely controversial prosecutions or non-prosecutions that we're now finding out about. So, for example, quashing twice Surrey Police's evidence that Jimmy Savile was a paedophile. He quashed that twice. He also was involved in pushing the prosecution of Julian Assange. So can you tell me how things have changed over the years when it comes to actually charging somebody? Because the CPS have got a sort of veto, haven't they?
Well, I'll tell you how it works. I've seen what's been happening with the interventions of Elon Musk. Look, we had the IICSA, the Independent Investigation into Child Sexual Abuse. I gave evidence at that trial, and as a result, 5 points of law regarding safeguarding of children have now been implemented. We never heard none of this on the national media. My evidence, I submitted one of the largest statements. It was 50 pages to the Independent Inquiry, in which I named these senior officers. None of it ever made the press. So when they go on about the blocking of investigations or the interference on a judicial and a political level regarding the grooming gangs, it's no different to what they've always done. We had Lenny Harper, a senior officer, who exposed not just the rape, abuse, the grooming, whatever, of young kids, but also the ritualistic murder of young kids. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
The ritualistic murder of young kids at a care home called Hôte de la Garenne. Lenny Harper was silenced and bullied the same way as myself. We had Mike Veal exposing our former Prime Minister, Ted Heath, of equally vile crimes against children. He, again, was bullied by those high up in the government in order to silence him for his stoic efforts. We have seen evidence come forward regarding so many care homes like Beach Home, Shirley Oaks. We have seen people like Nicholas Fairbairn, who was the Procurator Fiscal's advocate depute in Scotland. He was in charge of the CPS of Scotland. He was involved in the abuse and the rape of children in many care homes in Scotland, mainly one called Fornithy in Perth, where he was picked up by 15 young girls. He was the boyfriend, unofficial boyfriend, of Esther Ransom, right? How, and she was the one who instigated Childline. So we have seen evidence of case after case of cover-ups, silencing, bullying of officers. There was a case of the Magic Circle in Edinburgh, where a senior police officer, detective there, exposed the judiciary, those involved in at a barrister level with the CPS and the abuse of young rent boys. He was threatened as well. So it's not just the Muslim grooming gangs. This may be in many ways an insult to a lot of the survivors of care home abuse who have endured all of this. But I'm behind anyone who exposes child abuse, anyone who exposes the failings in the police and the judiciary and the cover-ups. So I'm behind the works of Tommy Robinson and Elon Musk for doing just that. But my issue is, this is bigger than Kashmiri taxi drivers. It's bigger, and it always has been, and it is effective all over. The law changed when I was in the police. So the police had the ability, the power and the discretion to charge whoever they wanted, from a minor level offence up to murder, the highest offence on the statute books. However, there is an offence which is what's called a summary only offence. It could only be tried by a magistrate because it was so minor. And it was the offence of importuning. And that is a man committing a sexual act on another man, mainly in a toilet. Cottaging is what, you know, it's been termed in the past. If anyone was caught importuning or cottaging, a minor level offence for which you'd get a fine, the department, the DPP, would intervene. You'd have to send a file to the DPP and they would make a decision whether that person gets charged, fined or cautioned. And I caught a member of, it wasn't a member of parliament, but it was someone in government that dealt with electrical engineering. It was someone high up in some sort of civil capacity within the government. Civil servant, that's the terminology. He was a high up civil servant to do with trade unions. I caught him in a public toilet, engaged in a sex act with a tramp, a homeless man. And the DPP intervened and refused to charge. And I caught him in the act. Yet, I could have got someone charged for murder or rape. But when it comes to that, and they would sometimes hold proactive surveillance operations on public toilets, right? They would occur in some boroughs of London, which were, you know, had a bit more fortitude. However, the only borough in London that never, ever authorised any sanctioned proactive work on public toilets was Westminster. And I was told that's because of parliamentary intervention. So the CPS, what they did was they took all of that power to charge away from the police. So in effect, the police went from being, you know, the common law system that we got to more of a Napoleonic system, where you would have the judges and barristers would make the decisions on the investigation. And they sort of took that role. And that happened late 90s, early 2000s, when they almost totally took the power away from the police to make a decision to charge.
So the Crown Prosecution Service is a highly politicised thing. It seems to me it's very frustrating for honest cops. I mean, I think we can presume there are quite a few of them out there who pursue an investigation, send the papers to the Crown Prosecution Service, only to find, oh dear, the Crown Prosecution Service doesn't want to prosecute. Well, I mean, I come across myself with someone who's a mentally ill arsonist who was living next door to us. We were reporting him, trying to get him moved out or taken into care home or something. Eventually, he set fire to the place and nearly killed everybody. The police were saying, we desperately want to prosecute this guy for arson, but the CPS wouldn't allow them.
But that's providing the police at that, you know, at the lower level, allow for an investigation to go ahead. And what we find with child abuse cases, child vice cases, child prostitution, child trafficking, I can't keep up with the new terminology, right, that they block it. They block it at a local level. And I was later to find out that because it could cause political influence.
Manchester Police, Maggie Oliver, she was investigating similar sorts of crimes up there, John. She has been absolutely adamant that the National Inquiry, which you submitted evidence to, chaired by Alexis Jay, I think she was about the fourth person they tried to find to chair it. They did find a top barrister from New Zealand to do it, and she actually chaired the inquiry for a few weeks and then said no, because this is being run by the Home Office. They're telling me which staff I can and can't have, and the Home Office is implicated inquiry.
Well, prior to that, they had Baroness Butler Slosh, and it turned out that she was related to one of the suspects that was named, and that was the MP Leon Britton. So, you know, I'm aware of it. I gave evidence alongside with Maggie, you know, and I've known her from my first path of whistleblowing. We got very, very similar stories. Hers got out there. Mine never did for some reason. And I generally believe because it involved central London and it involved those in a very more senior capacity. And also what I was investigating, it covered every sort of demographic of society. So yes, there were some Muslim boys involved, but there were Jamaican boys, there were white boys, there were family members. And let's get this right, Tony. 80% of all child abuse goes on in the home. In the home. Usually with the mother failing to protect the child. Right? And the one ingredient that is going to put a child 30% more likely to be sexually abused and sexually exploited, because those kids that have been abused are at a greater risk of sexual exploitation than those that haven't. And that is the presence of a step parent within the family home. So if we're looking at who is abusing and pimping out kids, and we are to draw, you know, a pie chart, for example, it would be on a domestic level than it would be on you know, any other sort of group or religion or whatever. And what I found was
one of the things that bothers me about this conversation is that we're almost sending out a message, John, that if this does happen within the home, often, even if the kids do go to the police, do go to teachers, they may not be believed.
Well, they're not. And like was said to me, this girl's a liar. She's a liar. You know, and then the system intervenes and the kids go into care. How safe are they there? Well, I'm going to tell you now, right? When I was working on a child protection unit, I went to the child protection office in Haringey, which had more, it was a borough in the UK that had more kids' homes than any other borough in the country. There was 26 children's homes in a very small inner city borough. And I asked the sergeant in charge, do you have any cases of child prostitution, as we termed it back then, on this borough? And I was told, no, none. Right? And I said, is there any capacity for me to look into? She went, yeah. We had an officer looking at it. She's on maternity leave. And in the 2 years she was looking into it, not one case. I instantly got a list from social services of all the children's homes. I picked up that list. I rang the first kid's home up and I said, how many kids have you got? Explained who I was. They went, five. I went, how many of them do you lose at the weekend? They went, three out of five. I said, do you know what happens to them? They went, yeah, a car picks them up and they're taken off to saunas and brothels. I then rang up the next time. Within 10 minutes, I found 10 children. Within 10 minutes. So we had the Rochdale thing with three girls. Look, in 10 minutes, I found 10 kids. By the end of the week, I found 52 children. I held a meeting, a multi-agency meeting with social services from that borough and the neighbouring boroughs of Camden and Hackney. I brought in NGOs that purported to look after kids. And I brought in the lead for child safeguarding for one of the major kids charities. I relayed my evidence and I was threatened by the safeguarding lead for one of these major children's charities that I was treading on toes and I was to back down. And then that whole investigation was shut down. 52 children that were being pimped out. One of the boys that was being pimped out was so advanced in AIDS that he had abscesses in his anus and he would collapse when he was interviewed by social workers and they just ignored him and they continued him to be pimped out. This is an appalling state this country is in, right? And when I was threatened, you know, with the loss of my home and job and children, they stopped the investigation, they scaled it down to two children. They never investigated another case of child sexual exploitation, grooming, whatever, until they were pressurised in the backlash of the Jimmy Savile inquiry. You know, and this is London. So if we think and we know that Muslim grooming gangs are preying on kids in Rochdale, Rotherham and provincial towns, what is the figure for London? Well, no one knows. No one knows because no one bothers to look into it.
I mean, you're talking about is in the noughties. Is there any evidence this is still going
no,
on?
No, this finished in 2006. Well, they've stopped the units. So what was going on? At least it was policed, although scantily policed, and there was the emphasis was on not to investigate it. There was still something, as we proved when me and my colleague managed to get a conviction. Now there's no one. So let's talk about the flying squad. You know, bank robberies everywhere. They bring in a flying squad. Bank robberies get massively reduced, right? And they did their job. So in the height of the cash in transit deliveries, if you was to withdraw the flying squad, what do you think would happen to bank robberies? Go up or go down? It's a no-brainer what would happen to them. You know, and 80% of reported crime in London is instantly written off and no further actions. 80%. When I was in the police, hardly anything got written off. Everything got looked at. It's a massive culling of detective ability. And the police, look, my message to Elon Musk is this. Good on you for exposing central government and the cover-up. Good on you. I welcome it. But you've got to look at the bigger picture. We've seen it with Elm Guesthouse. We've seen it with Dolphin Square. One of the reasons they're not doing it is because many of them have been implicated in it. And then the central inquiries take over. And the clue's in the word inquiry, not investigation, an inquiry. So when Oldham Council say they're going to hold their own adjudication, well, no one will get arrested. What is needed is an investigation, and an investigation into malfeasance in a public office for the chief constables and commissioners of police that have allowed this abhorrent, disgraceful crime to continue uninvestigated. Right? That's where they've got to stop. So I say, Elon Musk, look at that. Look at the sterling works of myself, Lenny Harper, Mike Veal. We'll all sit down and talk with you. I'm sure we would. And we'll give you a bigger picture and a bit of an alternative to the narrative we're seeing. This is bigger. This is bigger.
Yeah, well, I mean, the main criminals, you're right about malfeasance, seem to be the senior cops. We had up until recently Neil Basu, who was running the counter-terrorism command, which is the a larger unit, which we've had these various police murderers, rapists, etc., recently convicted under the new chief constable, the Met Commissioner. Then he's been replaced now by Matt Jukes, who is from Cardiff, from South Wales Police. And I've interviewed a guy called Tony Roach, who was basically just doing his job as a police officer in Cardiff City Centre, discovering the dealing of Class A drugs in clubs, reporting this, getting people losing their licence. So under Matt Jukes, when he was chief constable of South Wales Police, rather than close these clubs down by revoking their licences, he decided to instead sack Tony Roach and boot him out of his job for actually doing his job as a cop. So I wonder whether quite a lot of this, it does sound extremely political, is what I'm saying. Cardiff, obviously, is the Welsh government. London is the British government.
Well, it still comes under British policing. The only difference will be when you go to Scotland. You know, they have a different judicial system. And I'm aware of Tony Roach, and I've spoken to him in the past, and it's appalling what happened to him. But the other thing is, if there is any central government adjudication, it goes before the Home Affairs Select Committee. And at the time when all of this was going on, the chair of it was the MP Keith Baz, who was under investigation for impropriety involving the taking of cocaine and the use of young rent boys. Right, and they had him as the adjudicator. The whole thing is twisted. If you want to go back even further into the 80s, we look at the head of our intelligence services and the allegations that were made against him, the guy that was in charge of MI6. We look at members of central government that were exposed in being involved with the PIE, the Paedophile Information Exchange. Members of the government which were facilitating this pro-paedophile group. And then those that were implicated in the Dolphin Square and those that were implicated in the Elm Guest House. There were three members of parliament that were named as signing in. You know, and then we look at the works of Nicholas Fairbairn and those high up in the Scottish judiciary that were also involved in it. Their connections to the main charity that purports to protect his child line, the connection with Esther Manson. Why was none of that ever looked at? It's all there in public domain. And the one thing I think this scandal's doing, it's focusing on one demographic. And rightly so, it should be exposed. But please look bigger and see that the government have always, always covered up sex crimes involving children. They've always done it.
Well, you could always almost say that the grooming gangs thing is a bit of a distraction, you know, from much bigger things that may be going on still in the capital, in Paddington or wherever, as you were describing. But look, John, you're a detective. At the end of the day, you were, you still are in my mind. At the end of the day, there's got to be some light at the end of the tunnel. And there are criminal prosecutions possible for malfeasance, for senior corrupt police officers, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. There are. And malfeasance in a public office you know, carries a life sentence. You know, police corruption is appalling. You can't have it. You know, all we ever see is the picking of low-hanging fruit. We hear about officers caught for domestic violence, for shoplifting, for drink driving. Well, no one's interested in that. They get caught, and rightly so. They should be sacked. But when members of parliament are caught on a criminal act, if they get a sentence one day less than a year, they can remain in post. And if they are removed, they can appeal within 3 years and get their job back. If a police officer has a brother who's a criminal, he can't have his job. He'll lose his job. You know, why can't we have psychometric testing for members of parliament to see if they have got paedophilic tendencies? When I went for a job, I've had two jobs that involved high-level vetting. One was to do with paedophiles, and one was to do with top-secret information. I had to undergo high-level security vetting and psychometric testing to identify any weaknesses in my personality or any sort of propensity to like child pornography. Right? I passed all of them and managed to get the jobs. Why can't they do that for our senior, for us, you know, our front benchers? Why can't they do that for those high up in our intelligence services? Those, you know, the commissioners, the chief constable, why can't they do that? Psychometrically test them. But they don't. They don't. This can be resolved. This can be dealt with and dealt with in a proper, transparent way. But it's not.
Okay, John, finally, why do you think it is allowed to continue? Why do you think it's actually
current? Right, well, you know, without sounding conspiratorial, children are the gift that keep giving. Years ago, right, and I'm talking on a perverted level, years ago, if a politician or someone high up in business or in the police or whatever, right, was a homosexual, right, they could lose their job. They could be shamed, right, and they could be bribed. But now that it's not illegal, it's, you know, it's not seen as a problem. And then cocaine, if you had a drug addiction, you know, you was an opium addict, a cocaine addict, again, it was taboo, it was disgraceful, it was wrong. And if you was an adulterer, the same thing. But society allows these things now. It doesn't see a problem in them. But there is not one wave of society, demographic, community on this planet which allows paedophilia, not one. They've even done anthropological studies on communities in the Amazon Basin and Papua New Guinea that are outside of jurisdictional law. And they found even there that they deal harshly with anyone who's suspected of being a paedophile. One of the things they do is they banish them to the jungle on their own for 2 years with a good chance they will die. So no one, no community allows it. And it has massive, and I mean massive, blackmail value. If you can get that level of dirt on someone, you have them in your pocket forever. And that's why it is so heavily managed, so heavily looked at. It's got blackmail value. And with these grooming gangs, it wouldn't have just been Kashmiri taxi drivers dealing with them girls. There would have been local councillors, local businessmen involved as well. They would have been. So why would their criminality against kids be any different to all the other grooming gangs that are operating, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like a kind of political blackmail honeypot that's been deliberately created there.
Of course. Of course. And you can't tell me that the intelligence services haven't got some involvement in this. You can't, because they have. They have. You know, so, and in the advent of all the technology they've got, the listening devices they've got now, especially with the iPhones, and the authority they have now to listen to, you know, the SIS has a phone tapping unit. I knew a guy that worked for them, and that was 20 years ago he worked for them. They listen to calls. They always have done, so that they know who's doing what. It's all down to blackmail. And that's what I was told, and I spoke to someone from the intelligence services, and they corroborated and said the same.
Well, look, I said finally, John, but we can't skip over. We've had arrest warrants now for senior people in Israel over this genocide. And what we're hearing from the British government is it may be actually okay for the and they won't get arrested. They've said definitely they can go to France and won't get arrested. How is it that you've got someone who's running a genocide and yet they've come on holiday here?
Well, I think it's Singapore or Malaysia has an arrest warrant for Tony Blair still outstanding. You know, but how do you get near to these people? They've got security and they've got diplomatic privilege, and so you can't get near to these people. So it's pointless. It will never be implemented. So I don't know. That's sort of out of my jurisdiction, that one, really. So I can't comment on that. But it'll be the same as any sort of politician, a head of state, that gets caught up in criminality. You know, diplomatic privilege gets bandied about, and another level of policing and protection steps in. So
yeah, we've had an amazing thing in South Korea where the president's own police were facing down the South Korean official police who were trying to arrest him. If people are interested in following you, how do they do that on social media, etc.?
Yeah, I'm very quiet now. I've got a YouTube channel, just put in John Wedger. And apart from the usual trolling that sort of crops up every now and then, you know, you'll get a lot of my videos. I can be emailed at John, J-O-N, Wedger, W-E-D-G-E-R, Foundation, @gmail.com. In vain of what you've just said, you know, a few years ago, the Philippines had a president called Rodrigo Duterte. Rodrigo Duterte was brought up a Catholic. He was sexually abused by priests as a young man. He joined the military, he did very well, and he entered a career in politics. And he boldly stated, he called the Pope the son of a whore and said, "Your priests came to our country and they abused our kids and I was one." He called out to the Americans saying that their military personnel had violated their women and turned them into prostitutes. And he put out a stern warning to paedophiles. And he said that he will not waste any time and any money in prosecuting. He will just kill them. And that's what he did. He went out and he waged war on drug dealers and paedophiles. And he had little hit squads, as it were, who went out there just executing them. You know, I'm not advocating that, but there are some governments who took a hard line when it comes to paedophilia, a very, very hard line to it, whereas our government is not one of them. We have some very powerful laws, and we always have had powerful laws about the abuse of kids, but they are just not implemented. And that is a decision, I think, comes from central government, maybe Highland central government, and at no point is it ever pushed on by commissioners and chief constables, bar the likes of Mike Veal, who had a very, very strong approach when it comes to crimes against children. And look what happened to him. He was removed from post. So it's down to the people to demand it. And I hope what is going on now in bringing this back into the light, exposing issues around the IICSA, that they do start now looking at it, and that the public does start seeing common sense, and it starts putting pressure on the government to deal with the only crime that really matters. You know, and it's not race hate crime, and it's not transphobic crime. It's crimes against society's most vulnerable, and that is the children. And if you harm a children, right, harm a child, you're destroying the soul of that kid for the next three generations. So we need to get a grip and we need to put children first.
Okay, John Wedger, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure.